This week on Out of Chicago, we talk with Chicago photographer Michael Salisbury. Welcome to Out of Chicago. I'm your host, Chris Smith, and this is the show where we'll talk about Chicago photography, but we also talk about city photography of all kinds, so I know that you'll get something out of this. Well, this week, we've got an interview with Michael Salisbury. He's a pretty amazing photographer. He's got some great shots of the city, and they're kind of, unlike anything else that other people are doing, and I think you should check him out. Check him out in the show notes, and we've got a really cool interview with him. He'll give you some new ideas for some things that you may not have tried before. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about some news, some things coming up. Well, this weekend, I'm giving a couple of quick mini workshops on night photography down in the city. So it's Labor Day weekend, August 30th and 31st. So Saturday night and Sunday night. Saturday night, I announced it this past week, and it sold out almost immediately. So Sunday night, we still have a couple of spots left, so go and sign up for that if they're not already taken. And we will see you this weekend. So that's Labor Day weekend, Saturday and Sunday, for some night photography. Actually, let me also say that whether you're going or not going, you might want to check out some of the old episodes. I think it's episodes 2, 3, and 4, where I give a lot of my tips for shooting at night. Check those out before you head out for the workshops. The other thing that's coming up, this is maybe the biggest event all year for Chicago photographers, and I've missed it a couple of times, and it's just the most frustrating thing, but the biggest event, it's this October, so I'm giving you lots of warning ahead of time. The biggest event is Open House Chicago, and it's going to be October. Oh, let me pause and check. All right, I got it. It's October 18th and 19th this year, so you don't want to miss that. Make sure you put that on your calendar for one of those days. This is an opportunity to go down into the city to visit a lot of buildings that are typically not open to the public. You can get in there, get some great images. Some of them are set up where you can use tripods. Some of them won't allow tripods, but you can get all that information ahead of time. I'll publish a guide to Open House Chicago before it comes up, but you don't want to plan, a trip to see the relatives or whatever that weekend. So October 18th and 19th, put that on your calendar for Open House Chicago. And so that brings us to our interview. So Michael Salisbury, I found him on Flickr. Actually, a few people had sent me his link and said, you really got to check this guy out. He's got some amazing shots where he brings in some great geometry, patterns, some really cool ways that he shoots a city. Imagine, you're standing underneath all the skyscrapers. He's shooting straight up. He's got some really cool shots like that. He's got a lot of really good stuff. You just got to check out his links, and I'll put those in the show notes. And so to find the show notes for this episode, you would go to outofchicago.com/episode15. So here we go. It's our interview with Michael Salisbury. All right. Welcome, Michael Salisbury. He's a photographer that I found some people pointed out to me on Flickr, and he's on Instagram. Welcome, Michael, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Michael here, he's an amazing photographer. He's been doing this for a little while. We're going to talk to him about his history here. But his shots, if you go look at him on Flickr or Instagram, Tumblr, whatever, he's got some amazing shots of Chicago. And really what makes him amazing is that they are so different than so many other photographers that are out there right now. So we're going to pick his brain today on how to get some shots like that. So tell us a little bit about your background, Michael.
So my background in photography started in high school where I shot mostly film. I had an old Konica, an Ulta body, so I was shooting 35mm film and developing in dark rooms and things like that. Got my first DSLR, Canon Rebel XTI, when I was 16. And since then, moved up to a 70, and I shoot with a 5D right now, currently.
Very cool. Now, was that in Chicago? Where are you originally from?
I am from Chicago, Chicago.
All right, so you know the city well then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. So you started shooting film, you got into digital, you're all the way up to 5D Mark III, but you're not doing this professionally at this point, is that right?
No. My career is technical. I work in IT, and photography has always been a hobby of mine throughout school and throughout my career as well.
Yeah, and I think that that kind of that technical background kind of shows through in your photos, that you got a lot of straight lines, you got a lot of patterns, and just a lot of geometry in your shots. Would you agree that there's some correlation there?
There's definitely a correlation. So I delve into like a lot of the sciences through like the cameras themselves and things like that. So my technical background really enables me to use software. It works into my whole editing process. It works into, you know, what I evaluate in composition and using the camera itself. So it's definitely like a symbiotic relationship there.
That's really cool. What do you mean by delving into like the equipment itself, like understanding how it works on a more basic level? Is that what you mean?
Well, on a more technical level, like exactly what type of image sensors are in which bodies, you know, what is a chromatic aberration and how light is refracting through the lenses and things like that and how it's hitting the image sensor. So I pay attention to a lot of technical things like that through photography, too, more than just, you know, having a camera and taking a photo.
That's very cool. Now, do you do that just kind of for your own interest, or are you saying that understanding that better actually helps you to get better shots?
You know, I think it's important to understand those effects, and, you know, having a strong technical knowledge, I wouldn't say it helps me take better photos, but I mean, I think it makes you a more well-rounded photographer to have these understandings of what's exactly happening under the hood of your camera when you're taking a shot. So I would like watch YouTube videos of like how an image sensor works and things like that. They're fun to watch sometimes. So if nobody's tried that, I definitely recommend wasting like 20 minutes of your time watching a video like that.
Will do. No, I'm going to have to go pick your brain now. I mean, I'm a high school teacher. I teach physics. So yeah, I'll have to pick your brain on some of that at some point. That's awesome. All right. So tell us a little bit more about, and maybe this is really boring, but about some of the equipment. You've got like a 5D Mark III. What lenses do you use to get these shots?
Well, my 5D is with me, I'd say, 90% of the time. So when I'm going to work, to and from work, the camera's always in my bag with me. Attached to it will usually be a 16-35 2.8 lens from Canon. Mm-hmm. And alongside that in my bag is a Sigma 50mm 1.4. And those are the two that I have with me at all times. And I've got a 70-200 F4 that I keep at my desk. I don't carry that with me. That's too much.
Yeah, that's what I noticed, is basically those two lenses on pretty much every shot I saw of yours. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like either wide or it's 50 millimeters right on, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Have you considered going to the new 16-35, the F4?
Yeah, I went through, looked at a lot of reviews, and it's kind of funny because it's way sharper than the 2.82. Mm-hmm. Which is what I have now.
Especially in the corners, isn't that right?
Especially in the corners, yeah. Part of me, you know, and it's a little cheaper too, if I recall.
Right,
so,
yeah, you can make some money.
Yeah, I can make some money trying to sell it. But I love the 2.8 though. It's so fast. You know, I'm going to hold on to it for a while.
So do you shoot it at 2.8 then sometimes?
2.8 mostly.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so you're not necessarily going for... I mean, this kind of, you know, works into to the way you shoot your shots, but I mean, you're not necessarily going for that sharpness front to back. You're going for more of a feel that you get with your shots. Is that right? You agree?
Right. I know the 16-35 is sharpest at, I think, f/8. Mm-hmm. It's like incredible, man. That lens, you know, the f/4 is pretty sharp, but this still is very noteworthy, you know.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's been professionals that have made their whole career on that lens. So, yeah, of course. Yeah,
definitely. So a lot of the shots are, most of them are at 2.8. Usually if I'm doing some more architectural stuff, I'll stop it down to maybe like a F4, F5, or even F8. So depends.
Yeah, well, you say architectural stuff, but, you know, almost all your stuff is some sort of a building, whether it's an abstract or a real wide angle. But is that right?
Yeah, I guess that doesn't really make sense. They're all architectural.
Yeah, they really are, but I think I know what you mean. More of a traditional architectural type of shot rather than some of the other kind of interesting, like I said, just kind of like has a really cool feeling to some of your shots. So I think that's what you're going for there. Yeah. Now, do you use a tripod?
Tripod, very rarely. I think the last time I used it was at night. And one of my favorite shots is going on top of the Randolph orange line, orange, purple, green line stop. Mm-hmm. And they have those little catwalks over the tracks there.
Right. And you go right above it, right?
You go right above it. You get a straight shot of the Trump Tower.
Yep.
And that definitely had a tripod for at night.
Oh, that's crazy. That's the one place I was thinking that I didn't use a tripod. Because,
oh, really?
Because I mean, I think that sometimes they'll get upset if they find you up there shooting with a tripod and no professional photography or something like that. But
I've got kicked off a couple times on the L platforms for having that thing. But
You just keep coming back another day, right?
Exactly.
That's good. So I said that you use a lot of geometry in your shots. You got really great patterns. Like when you're walking around the city, what is it that catches your eye? What is it that attracts you to these shots that, you know, like I said, I think they're a lot different than what everyone else is doing out there.
Yeah, so whenever I'm walking around downtown, I'm always evaluating composition in my head. So I look up constantly. I'm always looking around when I'm walking, just whether if it's like on my lunch break, walking to lunch or walking to work or from work or whatever I'm doing, I'm always evaluating if there's a shot or not. And that's part of the reason why I have my camera with me in my bag, is because if I look at something, I see something and I really, really like it, that I'm going to stop, pull the camera out, take a few shots, and then be on my way. So I think, you know, in some cases, I think it does take a trained eye to be able to do that, just constantly walking around, you know, in everyday situations, to just always evaluate, you know, what you're looking at, and if it's a shot or not. You know, sometimes, you know, that's more spur of the moment. Other times, you know, like if it's on my lunch break, I'll have my camera out, like I want to go shoot something today, mm-hmm. and sort of like have a plan in mind or where I want to be, you know. But always I'm evaluating if there's a shot.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that next. I mean, when you head out, are you going for a certain destination, or are you more like a street photographer where you're kind of wandering and see what you see?
I'd say mostly it's street. Just having the camera with me and finding those moments, you know, is I'd say a huge chunk of my work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do go out on assignment and I have to shoot a very specific setting or whatnot. So that's obviously would be planned. Like I said earlier with the Trump Tower, I was like, I want to get that shot for a while, you know, and finally picked a night to go drag my ass up there and do it. So
right. Exactly.
It varies. It definitely varies. And especially if there's fog, then yes, I'm going up to Hancock or wherever to go take some fog shots.
Yeah, that's a good point. You got some great fog shots on there. I mean, all your shots kind of have an atmosphere to them, but when you get that fog in there, so you're saying whenever you see that it's going to be foggy, you're headed where?
Yeah, I'm headed up to, usually it's going to be the Hancock, because I have one of those annual passes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Paid for itself in like a week.
Like, right.
Seriously, yeah. Every once in a while, I'll burn up $20 to go up to the Sky Deck, which is a lot of fun. Always fun.
Now, so you're doing the Hancock a lot. When you do that, are you taking a tripod? What do you use when you're up there?
So actually, you got to be sneaky with the Hancock.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, there is security down there that if they see a tripod, they'll hold it on the ground level there.
Right.
I have seen people sneak up like little Jobies, and I tried that myself one time, which didn't work.
Like they wanted it? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. They wanted to keep it with the security guard down there. Another thing that I will take with me is a lens skirt.
Yes. Uh huh.
Which is like a little hood with suction cups that I attach to the glass. And I have had no problem actually with that.
Oh, really? They don't mind that at all? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, people don't seem to care. So that's always nice, because especially when you're shooting at night, that thing really comes in handy.
For the reflections off the glass. Yeah, I mean, it makes it so no light can bounce back, right?
Yeah. It's kind of an expensive solution. I really hated paying like $40 for that thing, but it's so useful.
It's easier. Well, especially in the summer, I was going to say, when I've been up there, I'll take like my black jacket or whatever and just throw it over the entire thing. But in
like
the summer,
so easily.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's a nice solution. I think it's good.
Yeah.
I was talking with Max Wilson. He does a lot of time lapse, and I interviewed him a month or two ago, and he does time lapses from all over the city from the top of these things. And I was showing him, hey, I got a lens skirt. Isn't this cool? He's like, oh, I got about 7 of them. Like, oh, never mind. it's a great thing.
Yeah, it is.
So what are some of your other favorite places to shoot in Chicago?
Some of the other favorite places, I like roaming around the Red Line, actually, in the tunnels.
Right.
Because you can actually, from Lake all the way to Jackson, you can walk underground between the stations. I've gotten stopped once in rush hour by, I don't know, it was like one of those security guards with the dogs, you know, they have sometimes.
Sure, uh-huh. So you're saying it's like dark, right, when you start going down that way? Like, and you feel like you're probably not supposed to be going there?
They keep it lit. honestly, they keep it lit between all the stations. And they're, my justification is there's no posted sign that says no trespassing or you must stop here or authorized personnel only. There's nothing that says that.
Exactly. I was down there with Marie Lagneau. We were doing street photography shots. And she's like, come down here. We'll get a I was getting a couple of shots of her, actually, with the train going by. And it's like, there's no signs to say we're not supposed to be here. So, yeah, I think that's exactly what the same place you're talking about there.
But another, yet another situation where I had a tripod and was promptly asked to leave.
Yeah, but that's all. I mean, they ask you to leave. That's it. That's nothing else is going to happen to you. People worry so much about that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Any other places it come to the top of your mind there?
Mostly, like, since I work in the Loop, I obviously spend a lot of time photographing down there. So it's whether it's roaming around alleys and getting, like, you know, looking up at the buildings and stuff like that is always fun. I love getting in the last train car in the back of a train and shooting. If they have that door open, you can shoot at the back of the window.
Okay, okay. So you just brought up like my next like four questions all right there. So the first one was that, I mean, one of the things that you really notice right off the bat looking at your shots is you've got all these amazing shots just looking basically straight up, and you get these great shots of the buildings and all the angles and the positive and negative space between the sky and the buildings. Yeah, I mean, can you give people tips on how you shoot that? I mean, you just look straight up and turn until it looks like it's right to you, or what's the deal with that?
You know, it's not like I walk up and take a shot and walk away. You know, there's definitely a thought process to it. It has to look right in my head. So I might spend 5-10 minutes just like taking two steps to the left and then two steps to the right and two steps forward, two steps back, and, you know, sort of experimenting with different focal lengths and things like that. So there's definitely me sitting there evaluating the composition and all these different angles, and then finally settling on one that's the right one.
Right. And I think what you say right there, sorry to keep cutting you off, I think what you're saying right there is a huge difference between someone like you and someone that's just starting out shooting is that they walk through the city, they look up, they're like, ooh, that's kind of cool. And they take one shot and they keep going. Right. But someone that's been doing it, they're like moving this way, move a little bit that way. Cause you know, just changing your angle, just moving just a couple of feet, like you say, makes a huge difference in the shot.
Right, and they're not horribly complex photographs, you know, but it's I've developed in my own style of doing it that it's just very aesthetically pleasing to me, done in the way that I like to do it. Whether, you know, it's the shot itself, and then it's the color grading or the post processing that I do afterwards, that really make it in my own style, I think. So
And it's hard on an audio podcast like this, but the people listening are going to have to go and actually check out your images to see what we're talking about. But yeah, you definitely have a very interesting style with that. So then the other question I had, and you were getting right to it, was what do you do when you're shooting? You've got some amazing shots shooting from the L, like going down the tunnel, these long exposures, like the one that I'm thinking of that I think was really popular, like the whole thing looks really pink. That is one of my favorite shots of all time. Yeah. I love that shot.
Thank you.
So what are you doing to get those?
It depends. There's one or two ways I do it. So usually it's getting in the red line and waiting in that last train car. Sometimes you get lucky where one of the conductors will leave that door open in the very last car all the way in the back.
Okay.
In which case there's that door that would lead outside that's locked, obviously. But there's a couple windows there where you can sort of just shove your camera right against the glass
right.
and take those photos. And that's exactly what I do. I'm just holding on to the rail so I don't fall over. And then with the other hand, just like very firmly pressing it right up against the glass to take those shots.
So every one of those is taken looking behind the train. Is that right?
Yeah, looking out the back.
Yeah, looking out the back. Yeah, because, I mean, they look like you're zooming through the thing, but that's interesting. You're actually, I mean, it would look exactly the same, but that's interesting. You're actually at the back of it shooting backward.
Right.
And yeah, those turned out great. So I imagine you probably just experiment with the different shutter speeds that you try, but is there like something you might recommend to people that you'd start at maybe for a shutter speed?
Yeah, I would probably do it pretty quick to start off because you know, you can do it the whole like trip. I do it's like on my way to work. I can do it the whole trip to work and maybe get a couple because those things they you know, you've ridden the L before, it gets pretty shaky. So doing a too long of an exposure can get pretty tricky. I did like a 5-second one once and it was terrible. I mean it still looked kinda cool, but I don't think I ever posted it. But I think doing like even a third of a second, because, you know, in some of the sections in the red line down there, you can move pretty quick. So even like a third of a second is good enough to get one of those shots for sure.
Yeah, and some of them look like just a huge long blur, but then other ones are like, it looks like it's sharp, but then you can see that there's a blur to it. So
right.
I think just trying all different speeds, that's a good tip. And that's what I got to try. Go to the back of that that last car and get right up on the windows. That's good advice. I like that.
Yep.
You know, another thing, you do a lot of these shots where you're shooting up. Some of them you got planes in them. Is that something you're just being patient for? How does that work out?
Okay,
are you going to tell me that you're doing this in Photoshop, which is fine too? We need to know.
So I should come clean now. There
this
are
is your chance.
There are several of them. One that I did post a few days ago that was a legitimate plane in the shot. It was perfect. It worked out great. Now there was one where I posted with like 25 planes all in synchronicity.
Oh, I missed that one.
Photoshop. Yeah. You'll have to go back and look for that one. That was Photoshop. And I did that in a sense that it was so obvious that would never happen that it had to be Photoshop.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You know, but it's very rare that I will do that, something like that.
Okay.
A lot of my photography, I feel the shot itself should be good enough right out of the camera. And the only things that I do outside of that is color grading, and that's it.
Okay, well, I wanted to ask you all about your post-processing. So what do you mean exactly by color grading?
So I do a lot in Adobe Camera Raw in Photoshop is what I use for my post-processing. I do use VSCO filters, the presets,
VSCO,
as a base.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, VSCO.
Okay.
So I think they're a wonderful group, great guys, great community that they've built off these presets. I'll use a lot of their stuff as a base for my post-processing, and then I'll sit there for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, adjusting the color, contrast, or what have you, to get a final image out of that.
Oh, wait a minute. A half hour to 45 minutes just for color and contrast?
Yeah.
That's.
I'll end up with maybe 5 photos in the end, and then spend like 10 minutes deciding which one I like best. And
oh, okay.
Best.
That makes sense. Yeah. Now, are you doing that like globally to the image, not selectively, or are you picking out parts to just change the color and just add contrast?
It's the whole image.
Okay.
Always the whole image, yeah.
But that's interesting. You might do a bunch of them and then go back. I'm sure it's one of those things where you look at it one day and you're like, oh, that was the best one for sure. And you go back another day, like, no, it's this other one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's actually a good technique, and that's actually something that I'll do is... I'll think I have it where I want it, and I'll leave it, and then go do something for 20 minutes, and then come back and look at the photo, and it's like, oh my God, that's awful. Why would I even think about posting that, you know?
Yeah.
So there's different techniques you can do to get the shot how you want it, for sure.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time, but it's usually after I've posted it, but oh well, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right, so that's it for your post-processing? You're using these filters, you're changing the color, and...
Yeah.
Wow, and adding contrast. How do you change contrast? You're doing this in Camera Raw. Is it the contrast slider or what?
Yeah, it's mostly with the slider. I'll do also some dodging and burning as well in the photo. I think sometimes that can like bring out a certain mood. Maybe if I want to bring the focal point to a certain area of the photograph, but you know, I never make it too obvious that was like just a burning spot in the photograph. You know, it's always very subtle. I try to keep it.
That's the key with all post-processing, isn't it? It's like, you know, do it so that it draws the eye, but don't do it so much that anyone would notice.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, no lens flares.
Hey, maybe that'll be a new thing for you in the future.
I was a kid once, you know, that I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Well, everyone did at some point, of course.
I've come a long way.
That's good to hear. So let's see. So you're going to be featured in this book coming up from Ammo Publishing. Is that right? It's the top 100 photographers on Instagram, and they picked you as one of their top 100. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so out of the blue, I can't remember. I think this was around the time I got posted on F-Stoppers and Petapixel and the VSCO blog.
Yeah, you were really making the rounds there for a little while, right?
Yeah, definitely. Photographyblogger.net as well. They sort of came out and approached me through Flickr when they said, hey, we think you're great. We're coming out with this Instagram book featuring what we feel are the top 100 accounts on there. And it's this little 8x8 book, and they wanted to use, I think, 5 of my photographs that they're going to print, which is great. So
that is really cool.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah, yeah. No, we'll look for that for sure. Mm-hmm. You have anything else coming up that you're going to be working on? Anything different or any shots coming up that you're looking for?
Not too much. I'm also sort of do a little freelance photography for Hype Track, the website affiliated with Hypebeast. And I guess I'm their only designated photographer here in the city, so sometimes they'll send me out on assignment to go photograph this or that. So usually it's just waiting for them to call, and then it's whatever I do in my free time.
That's great. Yeah, no, and you're doing it the right way. I mean, so many people are wanting to go out and they're like, you know, I've taken 10 good photographs. Now I'd like to be a pro. And it's like, you know, you got a good job. Stick with a good job. You know, go out and do it the way that you want to do it and love doing it. And maybe a few things come along the way. But for the most part, you know, do it because you love it.
Exactly. You know, I think I did learn that lesson when I tried to do my first art fair. A few summers back, you know, when it's mostly your friends and family buying stuff out of your booth, that was kind of like a realization to me where I said, okay, I'm going to hang back and really start developing my own skills more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think people, I've been doing this for 9 years. I feel comfortable in the fact now saying that my work is good. It's really improved, especially in the past year even.
Yeah.
So, definitely it's, the people have asked me, like, how do I get good? And I'm like, it's time. Time will make you better. That's really the only answer I can give you.
Yeah, and getting out there and shooting. And
shooting every day and time.
Yep, and spending time with your images, it sounds like, too, is another big thing. Because a lot of people will, I mean, you're spending time doing, like you said, color grading and the contrast and all that. But a lot of people just take the shot, post it, and never think about that image again. But I think when you're working with it in Photoshop, when you're on your computer, you know, you really start to think, man, I wish I'd kind of shot it like this instead. And then the next time you go out there, you do it, and you get better way.
Exactly. I'm looking at, you know, photos I did for a Hype Track assignment in this space. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, this composition makes no sense. Like, why didn't I take 2 steps back and have like a photo 10 times better, you know?
But the next time you're there, that's exactly what I'm doing. And now, and just right there, I mean, you can see you've gotten better than you were the last time. And that's how you improve.
And post-processing, it really comes down to, like, I always ask myself, like, why did I do it this way? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like people that make a photo black and white, like, why did you make it black and white? What does that add to the photo for you that wasn't there previously? And, you know, it's always for me, you know, doing different color gradings and stuff. I always try to set like a different mood in the photograph that wasn't there previously, you know, right out of the camera. So always keep that in the back of my head when I'm editing, is like, why am I doing it this way instead of that way? So I think that's something that people should definitely keep in mind.
Oh, that really makes me want to ask you that question then, because I know you have some great black and white photos. So what is it? What is it? Why would you choose to go to black and white on an image?
You know, for me especially, I haven't done it as much recently as I have in the past. Usually if it were like a really muggy day outside, you know, cloudy or overcast or rainy or something like that, I felt definitely black and white was fitting for the mood of the scenery, you know, being like the weather, whatever, what have you.
Yeah.
So gray skies, things like that, the light is very evenly diffused on subjects. So, mostly in situations like that, I'll go with a black and white shot. But yeah, I mean, I haven't done it in a long time because I just maybe feel like I can't really justify it to myself, you know, like this photograph doesn't need to be back in black and white. It stands just as impactful in color as it would in black and white.
Yeah, and I think I've learned over time that color images are much more difficult to do right. A lot of times, you know, you convert them to black and white, and it's a lot easier to get something that can be impactful. But but really, you've got a great atmosphere with the way you've got lots of darks and lots of that contrast, and yet you've got cool colors throughout the whole thing. Gives it a great atmosphere.
Yeah, and to run back to that, you know, I've met people that, well, like, okay, they spend 20 minutes on a photograph trying to grade the color, and then at the end they're like, screw it, I'm just going to make it black and white.
Oh, yeah. I just met another one. That's me. No. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Some of my best shots are ones I've spent forever on, and I'll do HDR and I'll do multiple layers, and I'm like, something's not quite right, and I hit the V button for Lightroom. You know, I'm in Lightroom. It's like black and white. Oh, it's perfect. Post it. So I know exactly what you mean. I don't think there's anything wrong with it either, by the way. I'm not sure if you were trying to imply that. But
Well, I mean, for me, like, I've run into that situation, and I feel... You know, personally, I'll be like, well, and, you know, I just don't feel comfortable saying that, you know, like I want it to be a good photo as a photo. You know, I shouldn't have to worry about if it's black and white or color. You know, I want the photo to be good. That's all.
That's interesting because I see it slightly different in that. And this goes totally against what I just said. But I think that some photos work great in black and white, and some work great in color. And I think that even when you're shooting the image, you should be shooting it for color or for black and white.
Exactly.
Because, well, to me, if you're shooting for color, you're trying to get differences in the colors. If you're shooting it for black and white, you're looking for the patterns, you're looking for lines and that. So I don't know. Lots to think about there, right?
Personal preference.
That's right. All right. So this was awesome. Thank you. This has been Michael Salisbury. Where can we find you online?
You can find me, really, just Google my name if you'd like, and you'll find links to Flickr, Instagram, all across the web. You can see a lot of my work. Probably the easiest way to find me out.
Yeah, no, that's what we'll do. So Michael Salisbury, and we'll put links to those in the show notes as well. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
All right. Thanks very much. See you later. So go check out Michael Salisbury on Flickr, on Instagram. You're really going to like what you see. It's, like I said, kind of hard to describe in a audio podcast like this, but he's got a really unique style and some great images. So start following him on there, and I think you'll really like him. Last thing today, then, we have our pick of the week, and I got a new toy. I don't know if it's really that exciting. I got, well, you know, lots of people say this, that, like, I always felt that my wife was kind of crazy with, you know, all these different purses or whatever, but I know that I've got her beat with a number of camera bags that I have, and I got another one, and this one I got because I really want to start doing more street photography, and I've been doing some and trying to figure out a good bag for it, and turned out that, you know, all the people that I follow, they seem to have the same bag, and so, of course, I've got to have the same one, and so I went out and bought the Think Tank Retrospective 5. It's a very small bag. It's the smallest bag in the Retrospective line. It goes all, you know, 5, 7, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. I don't know. It gets huge. It's like, well, when you want to go out there and carry 5 DSLRs and 12 lenses, then you need the Retrospective 50 or whatever. But the Retrospective 5, it's small. There's probably room for like my 6D with the 24-105 on there, and maybe one other like medium size lens in the bag. Or what I'm going to use it for is to have my Olympus EM10 in there, and to have my 17mm prime, and to have the 40-150, or I'm looking at getting a 14-150, and just have those two lenses in there. There's still room for things like a water bottle and all that. The Retrospective line, it's really cool. The look of it is kind of real old-fashioned, kind of canvas-looking. Well, there's three different colors, or maybe it only comes in two colors now. I think maybe they dropped the blue. No one liked that one. So the one that I got, it's called Pine Stone, and it's like that old kind of military green look. It looks like it's already kind of weathered. Really nice look and nice feel to the whole thing. You can also get it in black, and I almost got it in black. And it's like, you know, that's just kind of my style, a little bit more... I don't know, more plain, I guess you'd say. But I'm glad I got it in the Pine Stone. That's the one that most people get it in, and it really is a sharp-looking bag. One of the main advantages is that it just doesn't look like it's a camera bag, and so people see you, and, you know, they don't think twice. You know, you do that, and you wear your camera around your neck, and people just think you're a tourist. So far I'm loving it. It's got this great big flap that goes over the top. It's got lots of nice pockets in it, maybe too many pockets, but it's great. It's made really well. It it's a little bit expensive. It's like $140 some for a tiny bag, which is all right, that's way too expensive for a tiny bag, but I think it's going to be exactly what I want it to be. I checked out a whole lot of other ones too, a lot of other bags that were kind of the similar size, and they were all pretty good. This one just seems to be exactly what I wanted. So I'll let you know over the next month or two if that changes, if my feelings on it change. But so far, seems like a great bag. Can't wait to get out and use it a little bit more. So that's the Think Tank Retrospective 5. If you want to get kind of the same thing, but you want it just a little bit bigger, maybe you want to carry like an iPad or a tablet with it, the 5 is too small for those. If you want to put your iPad in there, you want to look at getting the Retrospective 7. It's just a little bit bigger, and so that'll work for you just the same. So the Retrospective 5 or the Retrospective 7 from Think Tank, those are my, well, it's my pick of the week. And that's it for episode 15 of Out of Chicago. Thank you very much for joining me. Don't forget this weekend, if you want to sign up and come on our night photography class, hopefully it hasn't sold out yet. It's going to be a lot of fun. I didn't say earlier, but we're limiting it to only 8 people for each class. So you're going to get some hands-on instruction, and yeah, it's going to be great. Love to meet some of you that I haven't met before. So sign up for the class. And we will see you next week. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm done. I don't really have anything else to say. So, yeah, we're done. All right, good night. Oh, no, I remembered what else to say. Thank you, Michael Salisbury. Thank you for coming on the show. That was great, and hopefully we see you again soon. All right, now, good night, everyone.